Green Sense Radio is brought to you by Green Sense Farms. We're changing the world with sustainable indoor vertical farming, growing more with less. Our leafy greens are sold live, so they burst with flavor. Visit greensensefarms.com and watch us grow.
Welcome to Green Sense, a weekly look at the people, policies, and innovations that are changing our world. Here's Robert Colangelo.
Welcome. You've arrived to the intersection of where common sense meets economic sense to make green sense. Bob Kessler, executive producer, will tell us more about today's guests.
And that's exactly what they were giving awards out for. It's been award season, right, Robert? Well, the Goody Awards are what the organization Benevity gives out to companies that are doing well and doing good. So we will get a recap. And also, we'll head to Cape Town, South Africa. They have water, but is the water crisis over? We'll find out.
All coming up on this edition of Green Sense. A year ago at this time, the city of Cape Town, South Africa was looking like it could run out of water. The crisis was averted, but not necessarily avoided. We're joined by journalist Udo Karlsa, our boots on the ground from South Africa. Udo, welcome to Green Sense.
Good to be with you guys again, Rob.
Well, we last spoke with you about 6 months ago after the crisis was avoided. How's the water situation now? And do you have any recent updates?
I think underline this, put it in bold and put it out to the world, because it appears the message of saving water and under the hashtag it is the right thing to do has hit home for the community of Cape Town. Because as you rightly pointed out, the last time we spoke, water restrictions were just about to be lifted, effective, of course, December 2018. Cape Town water restrictions were lowered from what we have as level 5 to a level 3, which meant that on average, each individual was entitled to use 105 liters per day, as opposed to the previous limit, which was less than half of that, of 40 liters per day. So in addition as well, residents have also been given by the city of Cape Town, gazetted by national government, a reduction in water tariffs. So if you're in a family using less than 6,000 liters a month, you could be saving as much as 35% on your water bill, which I think is good news for an economy that is already depressed. So the numbers and what is important to note here as well, they weren't just plucked out of the sky. There was some good collaboration between the city of Cape Town and the National Department of Water and Sanitation. National government said, let's try and save under the new restrictions between 10 and 20% of urban water usage. The city went in even harder. They said, let's implement 30% savings. And the good news is that in spite of being allowed to use 105 liters per day per person, consumption has stayed pretty much around an average of 60 liters of water per person per day, even though the crisis was seemingly averted towards the end of last year. So I think the messaging, the shall we call it social compact that was signed between South Africans, Capetonians more specifically, and government has worked, and people don't want the taps to run dry, Rob.
Well, that's very good news. It's always good to hear when conservation works, but I also think necessity is the mother of invention, and sometimes the crisis puts us into action. So we've read up on some research that shows a water crisis could take place as often as every 15 years. Before it was thought every 50. Did that story get any traction in Cape Town among its citizens?
I tell you what, within the media, it wasn't one of the highlighted stories. And in fact, picked up on that research as well, because I think what's important for your audience to know is that up until now, really, what the climate scientists and the water scientists have done, they've looked back over the last 80 to 90 years. They've looked at rainfall figures over that period and said, right, our planning into the future is going to depend on what has happened before. and almost looking at the world as if it is in a state of a more stable climate. And what these three researchers have done, two from the University of Cape Town and one from the University of Oxford, is they said, no, but hang on, the world is changing. Global warming has had a major impact. They've taken the best modeling that they can take from around the world of science in terms of how that climate model and global warming is affecting the entire planet. They factored that into how the city of Cape Town has tried to augment the resources they already have. And as you pointed out, instead of looking at every 30, 40 years, the sort of rainfall figures that we've seen, the real worry is every 15 years, an area like Cape Town, a water scarce area, could be sitting with the same problems again. Now that, I don't think it takes a rocket scientist to figure out that if the planning is incorrect, that planning needs to be updated and perhaps even more water needs to be saved. So it's good to see that the city of Cape Town, the average citizen, is almost ahead of the curve. But is there a shortfall between the planning based on traditional modeling and what is happening going into the future? And there's still a bit of a disconnect there. We're still not sure when the city of Cape Town is going to factor this research, if at all, into their planning for the future of it.
Sounds like a simple solution to add capacity to the water reservoirs. Is that something they're looking at?
In the sense which the city of Cape Town and national government has been trying to do. I mean, the city of Cape Town, as an immediate response, which I told you about the last time, three small temporary, and these are two-year contracts that extend into 2021. Desalination plants are being worked on, two of 7 megaliters per day and another one of 2 megaliters per day. Those are the capacities that those desalination plants will have. The drilling of boreholes has continued. It further exploitation of the natural aquifers around the city of Cape Town has also continued. And collectively, that should bring in about 10 megaliters per day, and particularly in a system where the water is being reused. We've also seen a slew of legislation that is being passed as we speak. I mean, right now, the city of Cape Town has published new bylaws aimed at continuing to promote more water conservation. Those bylaws also specify that water efficient fittings approved by our Bureau of Standards should be provided for all new developments and renovations. And in the past, the fact that that hasn't been happening has led to a lot of water loss and leakage out of the system. And there's a new water strategy as well that's been gazetted, and it's open for public comment up until the end of, I think it's this month. And basically, it's the same sort of campaign messaging that has led to the savings, things like wise use of water and cost recovery. Because in the past, our government's not been good at cost recovery of projects that they build. And if you're not doing that, you're not going to have enough money in the coffers to expand on those public works programs. So those sort of things combined with some legislation I see also before Parliament at the moment to curb the use of borehole water. For the first time in South Africa now, we've got legislation where it's all fine and well. You've paid the price as an individual citizen to have a borehole dug up in your yard, to have personal water usage, but that water's never been legislated. So if we use the old example of a 2-liter fizzy can of drinks, you may think of it as a personal citizen and just having one straw in that 2-liter. Problem is, it's a shared resource. The more of your neighbors are going to be digging up boreholes in their backyards, effectively you're adding more straws to that bottle, and it's going to empty out sooner rather than later. So I can understand why government has felt it necessary to even legislate that part of the water resources that we have in our country.
One way to take out straws from the container is to have people move. Do you see that the drought has caused a decline in population in Cape Town?
Well, not really. The urbanization rates in South Africa are fairly high as we speak. Like I touched on it a little bit earlier, that the economy is fairly depressed. The urbanization rates that we saw 10 years ago, those have increased fairly incrementally over the last couple of years. And I would venture to say exponentially in the last year or two, because the unemployment rate in South Africa is sitting hovering above the 40% mark. And if that is the case, you're going to have plenty more urban dwellers from the rural parts of South Africa. And when we talk about rural parts, for instance, in relation to Cape Town, bear in mind, as much as the dam levels have risen around the urban centers of Cape Town, we had a very clear warning from the MEC in Cape Town, the city of Cape Town, who basically said that what we need to be wary of is in further flung areas, arid areas of the Northern Cape, for instance, and the Karoo, we've not seen the same levels of rainfall when eventually there was rain in Cape Town. And as a result, those reservoirs are certainly not sitting at the same high levels as the dams that are servicing Cape Town. So as much as there is a movement into the urban areas, we haven't seen too many people yet moving as a result of that water scarce situation.
I'd like to know, our show focuses on economic and environmental solutions. Desperate situations often drive innovation. Have you heard anything good come out of this, technology or idea-wise, that can help save the drought or conserve water?
I think what we have not had for the longest while is an early warning system, particularly in commerce in South Africa and the industrial sector, where a lot of the large culprits who've been sort of wasting water have not had a system where you can either close off the taps or a system that warns the city of Cape Town that there is excessive water usage in areas that otherwise would not be using as much water. As a result of the drought, we saw that system implemented in the last year in the Cape area specifically. So that's an example of a good innovation. And I think I may have mentioned it to you the last time we spoke, there was this ingenious idea of taking massive barges down south to the Antarctic Circle and pulling sort of drift ice close to the city of Cape Town, and in the process, desalinating those big blocks into water that can be used for anything really in the city of Cape Town. As great as the idea was, as good as the innovation potentially could be, we haven't really seen movement on those sorts of projects just yet.
Udo, thank you so much for joining us and being our boots on the ground, and we wish you continued success with your water conservation efforts.
I suppose all I can say is, like the hashtag that rings around Cape Town, it is the right thing to do.
That's journalist Udo Karlsa joining us on Green Sense to talk about the drought situation in Cape Town, South Africa. This is Robert Colangelo, and you're listening to Green Sense. Subscribe to our podcast at greensensefarms.com.
GreenSense Radio is brought to you by GreenSense Farms. We're changing the world with our sustainable indoor vertical farming, growing more with less. Our leafy greens are sold live, so they burst with flavor. Visit greensensefarms.com and watch us grow.
Corporations in the private sector are doing more to help improve the world these days, thanks to B Corps like Benevity, which is a global leader in social responsibility. It recently announced its winners of the 2019 Corporate Goodness Awards. We're joined by Sona Khosla, VP of Marketing for Benevity, to tell us more. Welcome, Sona.
Hi.
These are the Corporate Goodness Awards, aka the goodies. How do you define goodness when it comes to earning these awards?
Yeah, so the Corporate Goodness Awards are intended to recognize companies who have really committed to doing good. So they're doing that through encouraging their employees or their customers, and even as a corporation themselves, through giving, matching, community investment, volunteering, and taking action. So these are companies who are really kind of truly living that tagline that I think we've all heard, which is doing well by doing good.
Can bad companies do good?
Yeah, bad companies can do good as well. I think, you know, many of you probably read the letter by Larry Fink earlier this year and even last year around how it's now becoming imperative for companies to really make a positive contribution to society. So, yeah, I would say, you know, the definition of a good and bad company is really changing these days, and consumers are demanding that companies do more good. So I think that's a good thing.
Have you given any awards to companies that may not have been that sustainable or environmentally conscious that have done good things?
You know, I think that's a tough question. I think that, you know, all of these companies have their own mandates and their own industries, and good and bad is becoming a pretty big, you know, subjective judgment on these companies. So we try to kind of stay fairly agnostic around which companies we award, and we stay fairly focused on what they're doing through their employee engagement and corporate social responsibility programs. And in that sense, there's really very little bad that can be done because they're driving a lot of positive societal change.
Well, let's look at some of the award winners and why they were given the honor. And this may clarify that for our listeners of what you're doing. So I'll mention a company, and then maybe you could provide just a brief summary of what they do. So
sure.
Let's start out with the holding company Micron Technology, and they were given the Newbie Award. So what's the Newbie Award, and what does Micron Technology do, and why were they given this?
Yeah, the Newbie Award is intended to recognize a kind of a new kid on the block in the Benevity client community. And they won an award for having the most transformative approach to their employee engagement program. Essentially, they went from a pretty manual process and implemented enabling technology to empower their people to support the causes that they love. And the company achieved 130,000 volunteer hours and $2 million given away in company matching funds in just 1 year. And that was a pretty incredible change because they'd only done about 20,000 volunteer hours the year before. And
that's impressive.
Yeah. And for 34,000 employees across 9 countries. So pretty incredible.
All right. The next one is the energy company TransCanada, and they were given the Moonshot Award for boldness and creativity. What's the Moonshot, and why did you give them the award?
Yeah, so, you know, the Moonshot Award was really intended to recognize, you know, program leaders or CSR leaders corporate social responsibility leaders who are implementing creative ways to engage their employees. And so TransCanada runs an annual campaign in the fall called Get Empowered. They allow their people to really kind of run the show and do some really cool stuff. So they ran a razor drive for a homeless shelter. They ran a Battle of the Bands competition for raising funds for charity. They brought in pet shelters and had people adopt animals. And they also used actually a technology that we saw called missions to encourage people to, you know, engage in small acts of kindness. So maybe shoveling your neighbor's sidewalk. And here in Calgary, as you can imagine, there's lots of snow. They generated $1.3 million in donations and more than 12,000 volunteer hours in just a month.
All right. The next one is MUFG Union Bank. And they received the Community Hero Award for Best in Class Approach to Driving Social Impact.
Yeah, so Union Bank launched our Versailles Vibenevity grant system last year to streamline their grant making process. They do quite a bit of that. But what really inspires us about Union Bank is that they've successfully integrated their employees into their grant application process. So oftentimes we see companies making very kind of top-down decisions about who they're going to give their money to in terms of charities and nonprofits. But MUFG Union Bank recognized the opportunity to engage their employees in that process. And in fact, they empower their employees to become sponsors, to review, provide feedback, and share the good news with those recipient organizations. So it's a really nice way of engaging their employees in some of their corporate social responsibility activities.
Well, here's a brand many are familiar with, LinkedIn, and they received your People Power Award.
Right, that's hardly surprising given what they do. so we love LinkedIn's approach, and this is, you know, we always kind of joke about them because they promote purpose through people's passions, and it's kind of a tongue twister, but they have 13,000 employees in 15 countries. And what's amazing about LinkedIn is they actually give their people the full trust and freedom to publish a lot of user-generated content onto their platform. That's not surprising, of course, where they come from, but that means that their colleagues, their friends, their families can access some of the donation campaigns, relief appeals, or volunteer campaigns that these employees are publishing to their website. So, in just their first 2.5 months with Benevity, their employees created, promoted, and shared more than 100 opportunities to do good across 6 countries. And this is really unique. You know, we work with about 500 iconic brands across the world, and LinkedIn is one of the very few that empowers their people and has full trust in allowing them to publish whatever they like, to engage whoever they like in doing good.
This next one is one that we featured on GreenSense for their innovative packaging, and that's Lush Cosmetics. So tell us, what award did they get, and what did you like about them?
Yeah, so Lush won our BCause Award, and that's really because of their dedication to the social landscape. And honestly, Raj, I could talk about Lush for 10 minutes.
Yes, we love Lush.
Yeah, they are incredible. So they have a charitable giving and ethical campaign, and they support communities that, of course, protect the environment and ensure the rights of animals. And they run a number of public-facing campaigns that tackle issues from, you know, banning microbeads and the trophy hunting of grizzly bears to marriage equality and transgender rights. They really don't limit themselves. And what we love about them is that they've got a very open approach to giving. They actually allow their people to act as citizen activists. You go into their store and their people know exactly, you know, what their products are doing, where they're sourced from. And they've donated about $36 million to 2,600 grassroots organizations in 47 countries since 2007. But they don't limit it just to registered 501c3s. They're willing to give to any kind of grassroots organization because they know that real social change starts with those grassroots organizations. So whether that's you know, groups on the ground or Indigenous community associations, they're really supporting those small but mighty groups who are making big change.
Part of Benevity's vision is one day that there's going to be no need for a separate category of B corporations because every company will pursue hybrid goals of profit and purpose. How soon do you think that could happen, and how do we best get there?
Yeah, you know, we think that's happening sooner rather than later. And I think Larry Fink, who I mentioned earlier, is really starting to accelerate that. But we've also got kind of activist CEOs who are really standing up and making that change. So, for example, Levi Strauss and the company was at our conference just last week, and they were telling us a bit about their gun violence prevention campaigns and their get out to vote campaigns. And in fact, you see that Levi Strauss and Company achieved 13% growth in profits in the last year. And so what we're finding is that purpose, or corporate purpose, is becoming inextricably linked to profit. Whereas one used to think that it could be one or the other, not both, I think we're recognizing that actually one flows from the other. And that is great news. And that is also because consumers are demanding it, employees are demanding it, and now shareholders as well. So we're encouraged and inspired and think that that's going to happen sooner rather than later.
As a employer, I can see that one of the big drivers is really the labor force. If you want to attract young, smart, talented people, you really do have to merge that profit and purpose. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we see a lot of companies actually competing on how well they do. So, for example, in interview questions, what we're hearing from, you know, these large enterprise brands is that new employees are coming in and asking them, you know, what is your sense of purpose? What do you do for your communities? How can I have a personal sense of meaning and impact? So you're absolutely right. It really is a differentiator for brands to attract the best talent.
Sona, thank you for joining us on GreenSense.
Great. Thank you so much. Have a great day.
That's Sona Khosla, VP of Marketing for Benevity, talking about the Goody Awards. We didn't have time to mention the winner of this year's Besties Awards, which went to Accenture Canada for best-in-class approach and overall social impact. I'm Robert Colangelo, and you can subscribe to our podcast at greensensefarms.com. We hope you enjoyed this edition of GreenSense. Visit greensensefarms.com to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play, and you can check out the list of radio stations that air our show. All you have to do is stay fresh, keep innovating, because when you're green, you grow.
GreenSense Radio is brought to you by GreenSense Farms. We're changing the world with sustainable indoor vertical farming, growing more with less. Our leafy greens are sold live, so they burst with flavor. Visit greensensefarms.com and watch us grow.
GreenSense is recorded in the Duneland ecosystem on the eastern shores of Lake Michigan. The program is copyright GreenSense Farms, all rights reserved.